Happy New Year, my name's Chase.
Happy New Decade. My name's David.
And welcome to RTR Forward, where we talk about everything and anything Pioneer Standard, Historic, Brawl, things like that. Got a pretty interesting show, as we've stepped our way into the new year. We've got some new spoilers slash reveals to look at for Theros Beyond Death. Before we do that, David, how was your holiday?
It was alright, you know. Spent a little time with family. Worked a lot. It's not really a holiday when it's just one day, is it? I don't know.
It depends. I know some people take off more time. I spent my holiday in front of a toilet sick.
Nice.
I had the stomach flu Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the day after. So I did not have a great holiday. I didn't get to see any family. Because I was...
Secretly, that's what you planned, right? You were like, I don't want to see any of these people.
Oh, yeah. I 100% planned staying in my bed for 14 hours, wanting to throw up constantly. I definitely planned that one. But I think this is first holiday season that I've ever really been sick. So it really sucked. But I'm better now, so I can finally eat. I knew it took me a few days to recover. Everything was starting to taste pretty bland for a while.
It's odd. I'm pretty sure I saw you on MTG Arena for 72 hours straight.
Oh, yeah. That was me. It was on Wednesday. I was grinding Brawl because, you know, I can't play it any other day.
Yeah.
But so it's been a pretty lackluster holiday season for me. But now we're in the new year. New Year's Eve wasn't as bad. Just kind of hung out with my wife. Wasn't sick this time around. What about you, David?
I went over to my uncle's house and ate food and then left at approximately 9:30 and went home and went to bed.
Nice. So see, David's one of those hardworking men that has to work on New Year's Day.
Have to is a strong statement. Elected to.
Likes money. He likes money a lot. But I've enjoyed my day so far. We are recording today on New Year's Day, so Happy New Year to everybody. But let's go ahead and jump into some spoilers. So we're just going to go ahead and just kind of cruise through. We're only going to hit mythics and the rares. Maybe some touch on some... uncommons that have been revealed so far that may be interesting, might see play in the next standard. But starting on us off, we've got the big man himself, Helion, Sun Crowned. He is the big villain, with the surprise attack at the end of the first Theros block, where he betrays Elspeth and kills her, sends her to the underworld. So he's back, probably pretty afraid of Elspeth because she's also back and, you know, came out of the underworld. So, that poor guy better be watching out. But he is watching out, so he's... let's talk about the card. Heliod Sun Crown. He's 3 mana. He's 2 and a white for a legendary enchantment creature, subtype god. So he's just, like the Theros gods that we've seen in the past. So he's indestructible. He's a legendary enchantment creature. He has the devotion clause, which is as long as your devotion to white is less than 5, Heliod isn't a creature. So that means if you play him and your devotion is less than 5 of the white, then he just is sitting there as an enchantment, can't be targeted as if he was a creature, can't be killed by board wipes, or targeted creature removal, stuff like that. He also can't attack or block, since he's not technically a creature. But if you've got enough white symbols, so the little white pips that are on the cards, so Heliod has 1 white pip, but if you play, an assortment of other cards that add up to 5 or more white pips, Heliod becomes a creature. But he's got some static abilities, so whenever you gain life, you can put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control. And then he has another ability that costs 2 mana, 1/1 white, for giving another target creature lifelink until end of turn. And he's a 5/5. So, obviously a very pushed god. We've seen 4 so far. All of them, besides this one, has been 4 mana. And if from what I remember, in the last time we were at Theros, there were also 5 gods. 4 of them were 4 mana, the other one was 3 mana, and the one that was 3 mana actually saw play in standard. So I have no doubt that this one will see play in standard.
So, quick question, and as somebody who played in the last Theros block, because I didn't, you may be able to answer this question for me. Looking at this card, it talks about the devotion clause, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if it is already attacking and then your devotion dips below 5?
I'm pretty sure it is removed from combat and is an enchantment.
Interesting.
A tapped enchantment.
Interesting.
I believe that's how that works. I think at any point, it's a static effect that is constantly checking, so anytime your devotion dips below 5, no longer is a creature.
Hmm. interesting little rules thing. Has nothing to do with spoilers. I was just I was reading the card as you were going over it, and I was like, wonder how that works. So
yeah. It's been a while since we've seen Devotion. Really cool mechanic. I'm really glad they brought it back. Just probably one of my favorite mechanics from Theros, just showing off. It's kind of like a flavor win and just a card mechanic win as well.
Yeah. And then, obviously, we talked about Elspeth last time, but that's the only other white mythic that's been spoiled so far.
I want to step back onto Heliod for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Because that boy,
steal that thunder.
That boy going to be broken in other formats, and I'll tell you why. Walking Ballista combos with this card for infinite damage.
I mean.
And you didn't think Walking Ballista wasn't, you know, stupid enough. Now he's a turn 4 combo.
Yeah. Wambo combo.
So, yeah. And if you don't know how that works, so Walking Ballista is an XX artifact creature construct. You can pay X amount, so it enters with X +1/+1 counters. So if you pay 1 mana, he enters with 1/+1/+1 counter. You pay 4, enters with 2, and so on. He has a neat little ability that allows you to remove counters from Walking Ballista and deal 1 damage to target creature player. So...
dear God.
How does that combo with Heliod, you say? You basically have Walking Ballista with at least 2 counters on the field. You use Heliod's ability to give it lifelink, and then you ping your opponent. You gain life from that because Walking Ballista has lifelink, and then Heliod triggers, puts a counter back on Walking Ballista, and then pings the opponent again. So thus, can create an infinite damage loop for, you know, turn 4, turn 5.
Yeah, it seems pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's probably going to get banned in Pioneer. I don't know. We'll see what the shell looks like around it. I know for Modern and older formats, there's another card called Spike Feeders, which just it enters with +1/+1 counters, and it just has a generic ability that says remove a +1/+1 counter to gain 2 life. So you can go infinite and gain infinite life with that card.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Heliod, pretty good guy. I think he'll see play in Standard. Some kind of if there's a mono white shell.
I mean, white's going to have to do some work. He might be able to help it, but...
hear me out. Okay, so we've got Linden. Remember Linden?
Yes.
The 3 white pip, like queen from Throne of Eldraine?
Okay. Yeah.
3/3 vigilance. Whenever a white creature attacks, gain 1 life. Okay. Triggers Heliod. Heliod puts counters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got... we'll step into this real quick. We got Daxos, okay? There's another new card, Daxos Blessed by the Sun. He's 2 mana, two white pips for a legendary enchantment creature. He's a 2/star, so his toughness can change. But Daxos toughness is equal to your devotion to white. And then he has a clause saying whenever another creature you control enters the battlefield or dies, you gain 1 life. Thus, also triggers Heliod. And with Linden and Daxos on the field, Heliod is also a creature. So he's a big 5/5 beater as well. So I think there's a deck somewhere in that. And
I'm sure there is. I'm just saying in the whatever format that is on Arena right now where they have banned cards, there were 0 mono-white cards.
You're correct. Right. Mono-white is really bad right now. And so Heliod might be, you know, the centerpiece for some mono-white decks to kind of bring them, you know, back up to par.
I'm just saying white needs some help.
White does need some help. All right, David, I'm going to give it back to you. I'm done talking about Heliod.
All right, I was just saying that Elspeth was spoiled 2 weeks ago, and we already talked about her.
Yeah, no.
But that's the only other white mythic that's been spoiled thus far.
Okay.
I wasn't going to go into a rant about her again. Oh, okay. I think we covered her well enough.
She also provides 2 white pips for devotion to her favorite god, Heliod, and can also create creatures and gain life.
Should be like a flavor fail there.
Yeah. It's not her fault that she's the White Planeswalker.
I should have made her.
She was born that way.
Should have made her mono black, just to mess with all the magic players, make them all cry.
Just make her mono black.
Elspeth's not black. She's white.
People are really expecting her to come back, you know, black white or
not, just straight black.
Just straight black. All right, moving on.
All right, so some rares. So we got Victory's Envoy. 3 generic, 2 white, for a creature human cleric. It's a 3/3, and at the beginning of your upkeep, put a +1/+1 counter on each other creature you control. Doesn't seem terrible, but it's one of those classic, it doesn't affect the battlefield as soon as it enters.
Yeah, you got to let it sit on the field for a turn, so it's probably going to die. It's just a lot of it. It's a big investment cost. And at this point, if you're getting any benefit off this card, you're already winning anyways.
Right.
And so this card is also one of the theme packs, like the booster theme packs, where they have them themed for the different colors. So you actually can't get this card in the normal set if you're trying to crack some Throne of Eldraine. If you're trying to crack some Theros Beyond Death boosters, you won't be able to get Victory's Envoy in there. You can only pull this card from the white themed boosters, which is interesting that they're now putting more cards that aren't in the main set in other packaging. But luckily, so far, these cards haven't been very good, so we're not running yet into the Nexus of Fate problem.
Let's hope it stays that way.
No, they're going to break it somehow. We haven't seen the green ones yet, so...
No, they're just going to make green bad. They got to make up for the ridiculous Throne of Eldraine green.
I don't think green's done being broken. I think we're going to see some more good green cards. Next, we've got a nice little reprint. We haven't seen this card in quite a long time. It's only seen one printing, just a really nice commander staple. That's Idyllic Tutor, which is 2 and a white for a 3 mana sorcery. Search your library for an enchantment card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Not much else to say about it other than this card was getting pretty up there in price. I think it was sitting around $30. Last seeing a printing in Morningtide, which was like circa 2006, 2007. So this card, just a nice little pickup. And so it's glad to see that this is being printed. I don't know if it'll make any splash in any other formats, but I'm sure Commander players will be happy about it.
Yeah, you know, Brawl needs some filler.
Yeah.
Brawl.
I mean, you can use that to search up any god, technically, and there's probably going to be some pretty good enchantments in this set as well.
Yeah, just general enchantment creatures, too.
Yeah. I think we got one more rare to round this out.
Yep, we got this here, Grasping Giant Boy, which is 5 generic and a white for a 5/7 creature giant who has vigilance, and whenever Grasping Giant becomes blocked by a creature, exile that creature until Grasping Giant leaves the battlefield. Okay.
Yeah, this is another theme booster. So it's another like powered down, watered down rare that you're going to get in the mono white theme booster alongside Victory's Envoy. This card's not going to see play, and it's 6 mana. It dies to removal.
Feels bad.
Doomblade kills it. Not a good card. Get it out of there. But I guess a neat little pickup if, you know, you're playing, maybe you can see playing Brawl, I don't know. They usually favor the higher drops.
Yeah, Brawl. Just about anything can see play in Brawl. Yeah, I mean,
that's for sure. I want to touch on these uncommons. A few uncommons in this mode. So we already talked about Daxos, Blessed by the Sun. He's a demigod, and it looks like we're going to be getting a demigod pairs up with their gods. So we're going to get a demigod for each color that somehow synergizes with their god. But we've got another card that, at first, I just saw it, and I was like, oh, this card looks okay. But now, the more I think about it, this card actually may be really good in, like, a blue-white control deck. This is the birth of, I guess it's Meletus.
Yeah, bring those sagas back.
Yeah, so sagas are back. We haven't seen them since Dominaria. Really, really unique kind of enchantment. I really enjoy them. They're different from normal enchantments because they... change it, they gain a new ability or a new ability triggers every turn, and then they do go away. Typically, when you think of enchantments, is they stay on the battlefield forever until somebody removes them. These remove themselves, which thus, you know, helps fuel some of the graveyard shenanigans that this set is trying to push for. But in general, let's talk about this card. So it's 2 mana, it's 1 and a white for an enchantment saga. It has 3, I guess, steps or story parts. I don't know what
I'm forgetting. There was a specific name for them. I'm forgetting what the
something
name
like that. So the first one is, so this one, it triggers as soon as you play this enchantment and search your library for a basic planes card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. Simple as that. Gets you a land if you need one for 2 mana. If it stays on the battlefield for another turn on your next upkeep, you get to create a colorless 0/4 wall artifact creature token with defender. Still cool. Yeah. Makes you a nice little, that's a big booty on that wall. We already know Boreal Grazer is as good at stopping aggro, but a 0/4 on turn 3, if you play this on turn 2, is really good. And then, third step, not as exciting, but you gain 2 life. Now, what I think is going to be good about this is that Control can use this for its first 2 steps, so it'll guarantee that the Control players can keep maybe more riskier hands, maybe more land-light hands, and be able to get themselves a guaranteed planes, and then a guaranteed 0-4, and then, see, 0-4 comes out on turn 3. You can throw down a Teferi. Teferi bounces the Saga. You get to replay it again the next turn, go get another planes, and then generate another 0-4, and then you probably just let it finish out and gain 2 life. So I think this is going to be a really good card.
Yeah, so real quick, I looked up Sagas. They're called lore counters on Sagas.
Okay.
And the other interesting thing is Sagas are historic. I don't know if there's going to be anything with historic cards in this, but historic is legendaries, sagas, and artifacts.
Yeah, I believe so.
So, I don't know, maybe.
I think that was just like a little keyword they just kind of like threw out at us in Dominaria. Like, hey, this is historic, that means these things, and some of our cards care about them, but
yeah,
it doesn't matter. So maybe we'll see it again if they try to use historic, but so far we haven't seen them attempt to use this keyword / grouping called historic, but Birth of Meletus. Meletus is what I consider a pretty good card. I think there's another one. So, did you see Reverent Hoplite?
No, but I'm looking at it now. So, Reverent Hoplite is a 5 mana, 4 generic, and 1 white for a creature human soldier that is a 1/2. And when it enters the battlefield, create a number of 1/1 white human soldier creature tokens equal to your devotion to white. So, could be really bad on turn 5 whenever it just spits out a single 1/1 if you have nothing else on the board.
You're right.
But, could also be pretty crazy.
It could be pretty good. It could be a nice little topper for the mono-white aggro deck that I'm kind of pitching here. You know, if you got like 5-6 devotion, this one adds an additional devotion when it comes in. So you could make, 6-7 tokens. And then start attacking with them, gaining life with Linden, Heliod triggering, putting counters on stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could just be a fever dream, but I think it's a pretty good card. And it looks like it's actually part of a cycle. So Grey Merchant of Asphodel, another card that we'll talk about shortly, which got reprinted in this set. Looks like there's a cycle of uncommon Devotions Matters creatures. So this looks like it's the white variant. And honestly, it's not a bad card. Like, it may not be good enough for standard, maybe too expensive, but I don't know. We'll find out. But people are already starting to think about putting this card in, brewing it with it. So,
yeah, those people have way more time on their hands than me because what, quarter of the set is revealed at this point?
We haven't even seen really a lot of it, anyways. And then we got another little uncommon I would touch on is just Banishing Light. So Banishing Light, this was printed in the original Theros block. It's an enchantment, 2 and a white for a 3 mana enchantment, and then when it enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield. So just another O-ring effect. It's good to have these in standard. It's good to have these 3 mana being on the cheaper side than what we've seen recently. We've seen a lot of 4 mana ones with additional effects, but this is just like your cookie cutter banishing effect, which could see play. I know Banishing Light saw play last time it was in standard.
Yeah, in some control decks. It's decent white removal.
So. Yeah, I think it'll be good, and I think that kind of wraps us up for the white cards. Any comments on the any of the white cards we talked about today?
I don't think so. I mean, we went over them all pretty well. So.
I think Heliod's going to be good. I know when he was first revealed, people were like, "Oh, this card's terrible. Why are you continuing to make white so bad? Why are you trying to make white rely on lifelink? That's such a small sliver of the pie. Because what we've seen in the past sets is white does 3 things. White gains you life, it puts +1/+1 counters on things, and it makes tokens. That's about it. And if you look at what green has done over the last, 6 months, it has done a lot more.
What are you talking about? It just throws out big dudes.
Yeah, it just...
And ramps. That's all it does.
It just throws out big dudes and ramps. It doesn't counter things. Gets you free card advantage, turn things into elks.
Doesn't have removal.
Draws you cards, gains you life. It doesn't do that.
I don't see what the problem is.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, moving on.
To the blue card.
Yeah, I got the blue mythics.
Okay, there aren't any. Revealed yet. As of January 1st, 2020, we haven't seen any blue mythics. Waiting for Thassa to get revealed, because I'm hoping that they push her again so we can see another nice little blue deck, but I don't know. So I guess we got some rares to talk about,
We do have some rares. So first rare I will talk about is Ashiok's Erasure, which is 4 mana, 2 generic, 2 blue, for an enchantment that has flash.
Ooh.
And when it enters the battlefield, exile target spell. Your opponent can't cast spells with the same name as the exiled card. When it leaves the battlefield, return the exiled card to its owner's hand. Seems pretty good.
Yeah, I will note that it gets around, since it's exiling a spell off the stack, it gets around the Ceratops, which has protection from blue and can't be countered.
Yeah.
So this gets around can't be countered, which is really nice. So yeah. You can get around a Dobin's Veto if you really want to.
Yeah.
So and the fact that, you know, your opponents can't cast any spells with the same name as the card, if you end up exiling one of the really good cards, unless they get rid of this enchantment, they won't be doing much.
Yeah, seems pretty good. Obviously, it's a pretty high cost for what would probably be in a control deck. So yeah. I don't think they're going to be able to run 4 of them. Just no. Go for it. But
it might be like a 2 of.
Does seem pretty good.
It does. It's kind of worse because there's, you know, Teferi.
Well,
so if your opponent runs Teferi, they just bounce it. And unless you exile their Teferi, and then what are they going to do? They don't have big Teferi to shuffle it back into to the top of your library like they did before. So
who knows, man?
I don't know.
Have to find out.
I think this is going to be a fun card. I think it's going to see play in some kind of control deck. So like this card and then the other Saga. I think we're seeing ourselves a nice little new version of the blue-white control deck kind of come together. But yeah, so the next card is, I guess I'm going to say Nadir Kraken. It is 3 mana, 1 and 2 blue. So what we're kind of noticing here is a lot of the cards are going to have a lot more color pips in their mana cost, kind of tying into the devotion mechanic. But it's a 2/3 Kraken creature. It has an ability, whenever you draw a card, you may pay 1 mana, 1 generic mana. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on Nadir Kraken and create a 1/1 blue tentacle creature token.
Seems pretty good.
Yeah.
I think this could definitely be like a type of finisher for a control deck. Pretty low costed, but it can get pretty crazy pretty quick.
Yeah. This could even go into some kind of like tempo, you know, is it deck potentially? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, they're typically cycling through and drawing a lot of cards, you could just create it, make this thing huge and make a bunch of tokens. So I think this is going to see play in some regard. So there's one uncommon I want to touch on, and that's one with stars, which is a 4-mana enchantment aura. It's 3 and a blue, and it enchants a creature or enchantment, and then enchanted permanent is an enchantment and loses all of the card types. You know what this card is? This card was a playtest card in the Mystery Boosters called, like, Enchantmentize. And so we're already seeing our first little taste of a playtest card actually being a black border card. And this card is definitely kind of pushing the boundaries on, you know, what Magic does. We haven't seen an effect that turns creatures into enchantments, making them no longer creatures, which is really interesting. So I kind of call this card the Make Your Own God card. So you can take any creature with an activated ability, throw this on it. You can no longer target it as if it's a creature. And then you can still activate its abilities. So, I don't know. This card's not going to see play, but it's neat. It could be. It might be good, and it's probably going to be good in limited.
You don't like that Sweet Oblivion? Come on, man. Mill.
Yeah.
Mill. This is actually a decent mill card. I'm not saying it's ridiculous, but...
Yeah.
Sweet Oblivion is 2 mana, 1 and a blue. Target player puts the top 4 cards of their library into their graveyard. And then you can use that escape mechanic to pay 4, 3 and a blue. Exile 4 other cards from your graveyard and do it again.
We'll see. You could, instead of targeting your opponent, you can actually target yourself and use the 4 cards that you milled yourself with to just infinitely, every time you spend 4 mana, just, you know, mill yourself out. So if you're having a really bad game and your opponent's just, you know, destroying you with his, you know, really nice mythics that he pulled in his set, and all you pulled were like rare lands, then you can just play this card, you know, play 4 or 5 of them and just mill yourself out, and your opponent's going to be really confused.
Yeah.
But
then
you can do it.
And then you randomly pull a Jace out of your back pocket and go, ha!
And then they'll be like, wait.
That's not in this set.
And you'll be like, nah, man, this is Theros Beyond Death, War of the Spark Limited, obviously, so I can have Jace.
Yeah. Or just pull out a Japanese copy of it, and then they'll just be even more confused.
They'll just be really confused.
All right.
I think that's it for the blue cards.
Yep. Moving on to black.
I'll let you get this one. You get our one mythic so far.
Our one mythic. Erebos. Black-hearted. Or no, bleak-hearted. Ooh, man, I almost
missed
that.
I also read that as black-hearted, so you're not wrong.
But yeah, he costs 4 mana, 3 generic, and a black. He's a legendary enchantment creature god. Pretty generic. Anyway, he's also indestructible, also generic. But as long as your devotion to black... Oh, that's just the devotion clause. I'm not going to read that. Okay, clause. Whenever another creature you control dies, you may pay 2 life. If you do, draw a card. Then you may pay 1 and a black to sacrifice another creature. Target creature gets -2/-1 until end of turn. And he is a 5/6. So, doesn't seem ridiculous. Seems like a black card. I mean,
I think it could be good. This card seems like a nice little pairing with, you know, the cat, which is oven cat deck. You can, if you don't have the oven up and you have extra mana, you can sacrifice it and maybe even kill one of your opponent's creatures, also then paying 2 life to draw a card. So you're still getting value out of it. I think this is going to be, this card might see play. I just really like this card in general. I think this card's definitely going to be a Commander All-Star, and I can already theorize a Brawl deck that I could build around him. But him being 4 mana does, you know, hurt it a little bit, but there might be a nice black shell, black-green shell for him, black-red shell, something like that. Maybe he could be a little top-end, maybe like a 1-of or 2-of in the Sacrifice decks if they decide to, you know, maybe drop a color. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he could see some play, but I mean, I don't think he's definitely not as good as old Helios.
Well, I told you, like I said, all the 4-mana ones didn't see play in old Theros. Only the 3-mana one did, so we're probably going to see a repeat of that.
All right, well, that's a challenge. I'm playing all the 4-mana ones in a single deck.
Well, you'll be disappointed when we get the red cards because there's actually a 5-mana god, so not a 4-mana.
I said 4-mana. Uh-huh. I didn't say 5-mana.
Oh, okay. So we've got next card. So this is a legendary enchantment creature, Harpy. So it's 2 mana, 1 and a black for Aphemia, the cacophony.
The cacophony.
Aphemia the cacophony. So 2 mana, legendary enchantment creature, Harpy. So it's flying, and then at the beginning of your end step, you may exile an enchantment card from your graveyard. If you do, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token, and it's a 2/1. So let's, you know, theorize that maybe there's a black saga that you played that is in the graveyard now, or you milled yourself and you've got an enchantment in your graveyard, then theoretically you could on turn 2 or 3 have, you know, 4 power worth of stats by having a 2/1 with flying and a 2/2. I don't know how good this card's going to be, but it's interesting. And
it's definitely interesting. I don't know, it's 2 mana 2/1 flying, so it's not terrible just for that reason. So I can see it seeing limited play, and then like, oh hey, it does this other thing too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think it's super great for constructed.
At least unlike, you know, that white theme booster, this one actually activates its ability at the end of its turn, and you have to wait for it to, you know, be on the battlefield for another turn.
That's true.
So I don't know. We haven't seen enough yet to really know how much graveyard filling there will be, how many cards enable that, and how many standard playable cards enable that. So as of right now, I think it's a cool card, but I don't think we'll see much of it at all. Yeah. All right, moving on. Treacherous Blessing. So Treacherous Blessing is a black enchantment, 3 mana, 2 and a black. When Treacherous Blessing enters the battlefield, draw 3 cards. Whenever you cast a spell, you lose 1 life. And whenever Treacherous Blessing becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it. I read this card and I think Dance of the Mance. Combo deck. I think that what do they call it? What was the other card?
Doom Foretold.
So I think this set is gonna bring some new tools to the Doom Foretold deck. Because drawing 3 cards and then sacking it to your Doom Foretold on your next turn seems good.
Yeah.
Real good. Comes back, you can reanimate it with Dance of the Mance for 3 mana, pull back, you know, a few Oath of Kaia's and Treacherous Blessing, draw 3, gain, you know, 3-6 life, kill a few creatures.
That deck obviously isn't like tier one or anything, but it is an interesting little combo-ish deck that does some cool stuff.
I think we'll get. I think we're definitely gonna get some new tools for it though. We are so far. So yeah, that's basically all I have to say on that card.
Yep. Next we've got Timuret. That's a guess.
Timuret or something like that.
Timuret. Calls the Dead, which is a 3-mana, 2, and a black saga, which has its first two steps on it whenever you add the lore counters. That's got a name too, and I forgot it. Doesn't matter.
I don't know.
But the first two steps. Oh, it even says lore counter on here. Anyway. Put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard. Then you may exile a creature or enchantment card from your graveyard. If you do, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. And that's the first and second. The third one is you gain X life and scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. Seems
okay.
Okay. It does. I don't know how many zombies there are in Standard right now. I don't know if there's a ton. Right this second?
I mean...
Oh, I have no clue.
People are calling this card like a weaker version of History of Benalia if you do have stuff in your graveyard. So this one does rely on you to have creatures or enchantments in your graveyard. A lot easier to have creatures in your graveyard than enchantments. Like I said, we don't really know a whole lot about, you know, what tool set black may have to fill your graveyard at, you know, lower costs. But if you can successfully do it, then sure, you can make 2/2 black zombies, and if they stay around, then you can scry 2, gain 2. So, sure. We'll have to see. So this is definitely a card that we'll have to see, you know, what support is built around this. But it could be good. It could be, you know, a pseudo History of Benalia without the finishing power that that card had. So the next card, Woe Strider. This is 3 mana for a 2 and a black for a creature horror 3/2. When Woe Strider enters the battlefield, create a 0/1 white goat creature token. You can sacrifice another creature and scry 1. And then it also has an escape ability. So for 5 mana, that's 3/2 black. You can exile 4 other cards from your graveyard, return this creature back to the battlefield from the graveyard. And then if it escapes, you can put 2+1/+1 counters on it. So you can cast it for 3 mana as a 3/2. And then if you later in the game, if it's in your graveyard, you've got some extra mana to spare and some cards in your graveyard to get rid of, you can make it come back for 5 mana as a 5/4. What really sticks out to me on this card is just the fact that it's a free sacrifice outlet.
Yep, free sac outlet. Comes with 2 bodies.
Yeah.
I mean.
And 1 body you can just use to sac it. So maybe a nice little slot in like an Aristocrats deck.
Yeah, and I mean, limited wise, I think it's, if you pull this sucker, you're running black because it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any good uncommons in black.
We got, big jokes. I'll let you talk about your buddy.
Yeah, we've got a reprint of Gray Merchant of Asphodel, also known as Gary. Basically, when Gary comes in, he drains your opponent for your devotion in black, and you gain life equal to your devotion in black.
That's not exactly what he does. Gary actually does something even more stupid. That each opponent loses X life.
It's each opponent. Sorry.
Where X is your devotion to black, then you gain life equal to the amount of life lost.
Okay, I was close to right.
Yes. So Gary actually, if you play him in a multiplayer setting, he drains your opponents for a ton, and then you gain the collective total of all the life lost. So it's a lot better than just draining them for devotion and then gaining life equal to your devotion. Gary's been a really good card. Hey, if we have another mono black shell to stick him in, he's definitely going to be in there as a top curve topper.
And he's a zombo, so.
He's a zombo.
But
I'd say that's pretty much it for the black cards.
Yeah. The Inevitable End seems like it could be decent for gods.
But yeah.
You can enchant their god and then they have to sack it. I mean,
but
decent. I'm not saying great, but.
Actually, the god has to be a creature to enchant.
Well, yeah. I realize that, but...
Are using it as like a way to power it down if they've got a lot of devotion? You can stick it on the god and they're not going to sack their god.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really not that good now that we talk about it. Because they would just sack another creature and then turn it into an enchantment. And then I'm assuming...
And then it just falls off.
Yeah. So, yeah, not that good.
Yeah.
I lied.
That's okay. We're learning. Moving on to the red creatures. So, we've got a few red cards. We got 2 mythics, and I think like... 3-4 rares to talk about here, but I'm going to let you hit the first one.
Yeah. That Ox of Agonos. 5 mana, 3/2 red for a 4/2 Ox. And when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand, then draw 3 cards. And it has escape for 2 red, exile 8 other cards from your graveyard. And then if it escapes, or when it escapes, put a +1/+1 counter on it. So, seems not great.
Seems like you'd rather want this card in your graveyard.
Right. Sure. I feel like you would want to discard it and then do it, but also having 8 other cards in your graveyard can be...
This could fit into, like, Phoenix, potentially, as your own, like, treasure cruise, like a Phoenix treasure cruise, because, I mean, you are, like, pitching a lot of cards, going through a lot of cards, so, like, you've got a pretty lengthy graveyard, and we all know Crackling Drake doesn't care about whether the cards are in the graveyard or the exile zone. So maybe this could be a nice little, you know, two of that is just kind of there for extra fuel. You could also, you know, you can use it to discard maybe some Phoenixes that are just trapped in your hand as well.
Yeah.
So I think this is interesting. I don't know how good
interesting it is. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
I don't know how good it is.
I think it would be very good if it had haste.
It would. I think exiling 8 cards is a big cost, though. But the fact that you can cast this for 3 mana less and make it come in as a bigger boy still is something to think about, for sure.
Posiblay.
Yep. So moving on, we've got Purphoros. Bronze-blooded. Here's the other. This is the red god. He's 5 mana, 4 and a red for an indestructible legendary enchantment creature god. And then he's got the devotion to red claws. So you're going to have 5 devotion to make him a creature. If not, he's just an enchantment that's indestructible. He has 2 abilities. One is other creatures you control have haste. So play anything else alongside him and start smacking it immediately. And if he's still an enchantment, he's basically just an enchantment that sits there and gives everything haste. So that's pretty good. Though it is 5 mana. But then he has another ability for 3 mana, that's 2 and a red. You may put a red creature card or an artifact creature card from your hand onto the battlefield, sacrifice it at the beginning of your next end step. So you're basically, I guess it's called sneak attacking something out of your hand. And since he gives everything else haste, it's going to come out hasty. So you could maybe, you know, take a Dracuseth out of your hand and put it, slam it on the battlefield, hit him for 7, deal 4 somewhere, deal 3 somewhere else, and 3 another place.
I'm just saying, I'm imagining a really janky deck with Ilharg, the boar, and this dude.
So what makes Purphoros better than Ilharg is the fact that he's harder to kill because he's an indestructible enchantment for the most part. But Ilharg doesn't trigger... the dragon when it, you know, does its effect, because the dragon comes out tapped and attacking, thus doesn't trigger its attack trigger. So Purphoros allows Dracuseth to actually trigger his attack trigger. So instead of beating for 7 with, you know, or
yeah,
beating
but
for
all
7
I'm saying
6,
is you have Ilharg, then you get your free creature as Purphoros, then you...
Oh!
Yeah, there can be some jank.
There could be some jank, because then... I don't know. I don't know if this card is going to see play. It's definitely more of a commander card, in my opinion. But, you know, it is 5 mana. But maybe we'll see some really interesting spicy brews with this. Maybe we can throw some big monsters on the field and just smack face, and 3 mana doesn't... And it doesn't matter that, you know, you're paying 5 mana for an initial cost, being able to cheat things in for 3 mana.
Spice is definitely the word there.
Yeah, very spicy.
All right, moving on to some rares. First, we have Storm Herald, which is a 3 mana, 2 and a red for a hasty 3/2 that reads, when it enters the battlefield, return any number of aura cards from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to creatures you control. Exile those auras the beginning of your next end step. If those auras would leave the battlefield, exile them instead of putting them anywhere else. So, there can be some weird janky stuff with that.
Maybe not in standard. I don't know if there's any, like, really strong auras that, you know, you'd want to throw on your creature. But the fact that this one kind of just pulls all of them out of the graveyard. So, let's say you're playing some kind of like red white mill strategy, and you, there are some really good white or red auras or even green auras, you get them all in your graveyard, and then you basically pull them all from the graveyard, throw them on this guy, maybe you've got one that gives them hexproof, and then you just swing in with a big boy for just a wombo combo insta kill. Could be possible in Standard, I don't know, maybe in Pioneer. I know in Pioneer we're going to have a lot more options, so this has some combo potential. I will say for older formats though, like Modern, you have a card called Eldrazi Conscription, which is an 8-mana tribal enchantment Eldrazi aura that enchants a creature. Enchanted creature gets +10/+10 and trample and annihilator 2. So you could throw that in your graveyard and then, you know, play this guy out and you're swinging with a 13/12 with annihilator 2 and trample. That's pretty good.
Seems decent.
So that's the one a lot of people have eyeballed as, you know, has the most potential. But I could see this as maybe just like a self-mill strategy that, you know, you're trying to get the assemble the pieces in the yard and then just play this guy and attach all of them to it and have your Hail Mary, you know, attacking with a huge Boggle, basically. So you could, maybe we could see like a standard Boggles deck.
Maybe.
Maybe with this as like a top end. But I don't know. Very interesting card. But next, we have Storm's Fury. 4 mana for 2 and 2 red for a sorcery. Storm's Fury deals 4 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. We've got a mono red board wipe on our hands, boys.
Yeah, pretty typical mono red board wipe. I mean, except it does hit planeswalkers. That it seems like every like mono red board wipe card does however much damage its cost is plus something else a little different.
Yeah.
So the hitting planeswalkers is a little different.
So that's what makes this one stand out. When you really think about, you know, what are the good cards right now in Standard, a large majority of them have 3 or less toughness. There's not really any ones that have 4 toughness, and then we've got some that have 5 toughness, like Lovestruck Beast. Keep in mind that this does kill Questing Beasts, so the fact that it kills Questing Beasts makes it pretty good. I think that's like kind of the only card I can think of right now that has 4 toughness that's really good and sees a lot of play.
Ceratops,
yeah.
Sees a decent amount of play.
So, like, and the fact that, you know, you can play this against the Fires of Invention decks. So you can kill their Teferi. Kill their 4-4 flyers, because I know they run those Sphinxes that are 4-4s. Mm-hmm. But I'm fairly certain the Elementals are all 5-5s and 6-5s.
Yes, I think that's right.
But the fact that you can, you know, kill a Teferi the format, like, it could be good. I don't know, maybe this card could propel maybe a Jeskai control deck to some degree.
Maybe
just the fact that it deals with planeswalkers, and that's one of the big things that red always has a problem with, especially if you're playing some kind of red based control deck.
Interestingly, is you could do some sort of red planeswalker control deck and it deal 4 damage to your own Chandra, which then deals 4 damage to anything else.
Yeah, you could do that.
And it wouldn't kill her immediately if you had theoretically just plus Wander the turn before or whatever. So,
yeah.
Interesting. It's a real thing.
Not saying it's a real thing, but I think this doing 4 damage, not just to creatures, but planeswalkers, is what could propel it into being somewhat playable.
Next, we got the Acroan War, which is a 4-mana saga, 3 and a red. When it first comes in, you gain control of target creature for as long as the Acroan War remains on the battlefield. And then when you put the second lore counter on, until your next turn, creatures your opponent control attack each combat, if able. And then the third lore counter, each tapped creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. So basically it forces them to attack and then kills them on your next turn, theoretically, if their power is greater than their toughness. I don't know. That seems like it's got very corner case good.
Yeah. It is a, what is it, an act of treason for 4 mana, but also can also like kill your opponent's creatures too. So it's like an act of treason attached to maybe I know we just had in War of the Spark, it's the white red deals damage equal to their cells equal to their power, like the Justice Strike of board wipes. So then you have your own little Justice Strike board wipe. I can't
Searing Blaze?
No, not Searing Blaze.
I don't know.
But anyway, Solar Blaze, I think, is what
it's called. Solar Blaze, yeah.
But so it's kind of a Solar Blaze attached to the end of it if they're tapped. And assuming that, you know, your opponent didn't play any creatures during that the next thing, they would have some tapped creatures due to the second step. But what I like about this is its art. So the Encroan War was started by poor little King in the Blue having his wife stolen by the guy in the red. But from what it looks like, the wife wasn't, like, stolen. She just didn't like the Blue King and liked the Red King better because she's got, like, her hand out saying no. And he's like, but my wife! So then in the next tile of the tapestry, you have him assembling his army, ready to fight for his wife that left him willingly. And then you have them fighting, the red and the blues fighting each other. And then I guess the person who was writing the tapestry died in the war because there's no war after that. And you can see, like, a loose thread underneath. I just think it's really cool art. It's definitely a really neat way to illustrate Saga.
Sagas are always interesting because they're, like, supposed to be telling a story anyway, right? So, always pretty cool. I don't think... Did you want to talk about the one red uncommon? Or are we good?
No, we got Underworld Breach. We didn't talk about that.
Did we not?
No. Let's talk about... So, the final card of the reds, Underworld Breach. It's 2 mana for 1 in a red.
Oh, I thought it was from the theme boosters because it's the borderless artwork, and it didn't have a number after it, so that's why I didn't even look at it.
Gotcha. No. Underworld Breach, 1 in a red for a red enchantment. Each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to its card's mana cost, plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. At the beginning of your next end step, or at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach. So it's a little Hail Mary where you pay 2 mana, and then you start recasting things from your graveyard. So it's kind of... Escape is kind of a pseudo flashback with a little bit of extra hoops to jump through, but it makes it a little better than flashback because instead of, you know, once you flashback a spell, it exiles the spell, whereas escape keeps the spell in your graveyard if it dies again, thus allowing you to keep recurring it at the cost of exiling other cards. So eventually you're not going to be able to recur it because you're not going to have any other cards in your graveyard to exile from it. But people have already been eyeballing Underworld Breach as, you know, kind of some kind of combo enabler in older formats. I don't really know what you can enable it with, but people are saying that it's reminiscent of Yawgmoth's Will, which notoriously broken black card that'll let you cast stuff here in your graveyard until end of turn at instant speed. I think it was instant speed or sorcery. I don't know. But I don't know how good... I don't have enough knowledge on what this could combo with to evaluate it, but it could be broken. Who knows?
I don't know.
That's it for the red cards.
So we've got the only mythic green spoiled so far is Nylea, Sharp-Eyed, which is 4 mana, 3, and a green. For a legendary creature enchantment god that's a 5/6 and indestructible, and as long as your devotion is 5 or more, she's a creature. Typical. But creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And then you can pay 2 and a green to reveal the top card of your library. If it is a creature card, add it to your hand. Otherwise, you may put it into your graveyard. Which is interesting, because it says may. So, it doesn't really say to just leave it on top, but I'm assuming it means to just leave it on top.
That's what I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, it's what it wants you to do. But I'm like, it's just weird that it doesn't spell that out for, like, new players.
To be fair, this is translated from a different language, so I don't actually know what is actually part of the effect, but this is it's a rough translation based on it. But how do you feel about this card?
Interesting? I don't know. I mean, having not really played with the Theros gods. I don't know how to judge these guys.
They're definitely a different animal for sure. They're pretty neat. These were our first, you know, introductions to gods in general. Then we got the Amonkhet gods eventually, and they kind of did a little spin on them. But yeah, the fact that these are enchantments, when you know you don't have the devotion, it makes them really hard to kill. Very hard to kill.
Yeah,
makes sense. Typically, you don't have an exiling enchantment removal in your main deck, so. They're really sticky, very sticky cards. But this card is reminiscent of Duskwatch Recruiter for me. If you don't know what that is, it's a card from Shadows Over Innistrad It's like, I think it was two mana for like a human that, so his effect was three mana, two and a green, and it was look the top three, and then you can put a reveal creature and put it in your hand. Kind of reminiscent of Nylea's ability, where you can look at the top card of your library, and if it's a creature, put it to your hand. And then on the other side of Duskwatch Recruiter, he was a werewolf, so if your opponent didn't play spells or you didn't play spells, it flips on the next upkeep. And on the other side, the werewolf version of the Duskwatch Recruiter, he made your creature spells cost one less. So this is kind of like, it's a pseudo Duskwatch Recruiter with both abilities stapled onto an indestructible enchantment. So I don't know, you know, that, you know, once you hit four mana, like how much worth it is to have one less costing for creatures, I don't know, but this could be good. I can't evaluate it very well. I know I'm going to, if I open any copies, I'm going to slot them in, and I'll definitely play with it in Arena, just to play with it, put it into some kind of red-green monsters list.
Yeah.
But
the only green non-themed booster rare that we've got spoiled so far is Cetacin Champion. It's two and a green for a human warrior. That's a 1/3, and it has Constellation, which I don't think we've talked about Constellation yet. It's the first time seeing it. Anyway, Constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Cetacin Champion and draw a card. So, if you're playing an Enchantments Matters deck,
yeah,
you can draw some cards.
I mean, it kind of curves out Cetacin Champion into Nylea. Draw a card, put a counter.
Yeah.
It curves.
I mean, it doesn't seem terrible. I mean, obviously, you need to be in the right kind of deck.
Yeah, I think this card is really good. I think if you've got, you know, a nice little shell to put around it, the fact that anytime you cast an enchantment triggers this, and they're not just, you know, regular enchantments, but they're enchantment creatures as well, that we're definitely going to see a lot of enchantment creatures too. The fact that you can put a counter on this and draw a card to kind of refill your hand is really good. So Constellations of Effect we saw in Journey into Nyx back in the original Theros block. This time around, we're seeing it with a slightly different altered effect. So originally, the only cards or creatures that had Constellation were also enchantments themselves. So their version of Constellation also triggered off of them entering the battlefield. I feel like this card would be pretty broken if it triggered off of itself and put a counter on it immediately and drew you a card. So basically, Mark Rosewater had said when they, you know, reintroduced Constellation, they went away from having it trigger itself and instead be just a normal creature that is triggered by other enchantments. He said this allowed them to kind of buff up the Constellation effects, make them a little stronger, to have a little bit of a higher payoff for playing like enchantments. So this is obviously, this is one of our first Constellation cards that we've seen so far, and based on its effect, it's very powerful.
Yeah, seems good. Move on to that artifact. But it's Nyx Lotus, which it's got Lotus in the name. It's got to be great, right?
Yeah, it's got to be at least zero mana, right?
It's four mana. And when it enters the battlefield, it's tapped. And then you may tap it and choose a color. Add an amount of mana of that color equal to your devotion to that color. So, could be good.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to see much standard
play. It's going to be in, I'll tell you where it's going to be. It's going to be in Brawl, and it's going to be in Commander. I think this card is going to be a Commander staple. Yeah. A lot of, I would say, like, two-color to one-color decks. This card being able to, you know, based on how big your board is and how many different permanents you have out that have, you know, colored mana costs in them. This could tap for a lot of mana. So I think this is a welcome inclusion. It's really neat to see them kind of use the devotion mechanic as a way to, you know, add multiple amounts of mana. So it's a cool card.
Moving on to that multicolored. So we talked about Ashiok and Arthreos last week. Yep. But there is another three mana god. You lied to me. You said Heliod was the only one.
I've realized that I forgot about this god too, because this god was one of the, like, was spoiled on like Christmas Eve. And if you remember on Christmas Eve, I was puking my guts out.
I don't know what you're talking about. So I do not remember this. I remember you telling me. I don't remember it.
I don't remember this card because I was dazed and confused most of the holidays and when this card was revealed.
But anyway, we've got Clothis, God of Destiny, which is one a red and a green, for a 4/5 indestructible legendary enchantment creature god. And as long as your devotion to red and green is less than 7, it isn't a creature. And then at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a land card, add red or green. Otherwise, you gain 2 life, and Clothis deals 2 damage to each opponent. Seems interesting. Not crazy, though.
I think it's going to see standard play in some amount or another.
I think it will see standard play, but it's not like one of those where people are like, this card's busted.
Yeah, no, this ain't Oko busted, but I'd say it's still pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, you can, if you've got lands and graveyards, then, because I mean, I assume we're going to see a lot of ways to get stuff in the graveyard, so I think people are going to be playing with their graveyards a lot, so having a card like this that can kind of keep people's graveyards in check will be really nice, and getting the additional bonuses of adding mana or dealing damage is going to be really nice. But yeah, if you just kind of, you know, throw this in as, you know, a nice little graveyard reducer, just kind of keep graveyards in check in like a red green monsters list, I mean, this will have no problem with becoming a creature and just being a 4/5 indestructible beater. So I think it's going to see play. I think it's a good card, and it is interesting to see a red green god. So last time we went to Theros, we had Xenagos, which was a planeswalker, red-green planeswalker that ascended to godhood because there was no red-green god, because the red-green god had either died or was missing. I don't remember the lore exactly. We'll probably have a lore recap in a few episodes. I don't know. I'll have to read up. But yeah, so this, I believe this is the prophesied missing god that was not in the original set that Xenagos had replaced. So this is Clothis. She's the god of destiny, and she's back, and she's got a vengeance because she freaking hates Elspeth. That's all I know.
Why does it gotta be Elspeth?
It's because Elspeth came out of the underworld, and people don't like when people come back from the underworld, especially this god.
Oh, okay. Well, rip.
Yep.
Everything that Lily touches? I don't know.
I don't know. She hasn't met Liliana, but I feel like if she did, she'd be very upset.
Liliana's banned from this plane. All right. Multicolored rares.
Let's do it. Speed round.
Okay. Dalakos, Crafter of Wonders, 1 blue and a red, for a legendary creature, Merfolk Artificer. Tap, add 2 colorless, spend this mana only to cast artifact spells or activate abilities of artifacts. Equip creatures you control have flying and haste.
I'm going to slap so many swords on this boy and commander. Yeah.
Seems interesting. It doesn't even have to be on this boy.
No. But you can put it on this boy, yeah, because it is equipped, yeah, creatures you control, not other creatures.
Yeah, but it can be other creatures too.
You're right.
See, definitely a commander-esque card.
Oh, I'm gonna build around this. You know, I was telling you I was gonna build a swords deck. This is my commander for that swords deck. This is my boy. But Allure of the Unknown. We're not gonna talk about this card. This card's garbage. Moving on.
Thank you.
Atriss, Oracle of Half Truths. 2 and a blue and a black for a 4 mana legendary creature human advisor with menace. It's a 3/2. And then when Artriss, Oracle of Half Truths enters the battlefield, target opponent looks at the top 3 cards of your library and separates them into a face down pile and a face up pile. Put one pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard.
Seems like a fun card.
It does seem like a fun card. You could definitely you can definitely gauge the skill level of who is choosing for you based on, you know, how they do it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's gonna see play, but it's neat. It'll be a fun limited card. I'd be excited to pull it in the pre-release to see what happens.
Last one is Galia of the Endless Dance. It is a red and a green, for a legendary creature, Satyr, has haste, and it's a 2/2. Other satyrs you control get +1/+1 and have haste. And whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, you may discard a card at random. If you do, draw 2 cards. I think there's only like
one other
10 satyrs that have ever been printed. It's not a very big number.
I know there's one other satyr printed.
Oh, is it satyr?
That's what I call it. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Satyr printed in original Theros. It was like a 1-drop red 2/1 that had, I think if you dealt damage to it, it dealt damage to you. But I think that's the only other one in Pioneer, but maybe we'll see a few other Satyrs. This card looks interesting. Could be a fun commander to build around. Don't know if it'll really see play in Standard. If it does, it's just going to be for the fact that it's a 2-2 that you can just slot into like a red-green aggressive deck that could draw you cards. So, I don't know. Maybe.
Yep. All right. Moving on to lands.
We haven't even talked. You forgot about the goodest boy?
No. Okay, fine. We'll talk about the goodest
boy. Kunuros. He's in the set. He just only has a full border card right now, so David also skipped him. But it's Kunuros, Hound of Athreos. He's a 3-mana, 3/3, legendary creature hound. He's a poopy dog. And he's 1 white and a black. And he has Vigilance, Menace, and Lifelink, so he's keyword soup. He also has creature cards and graveyards can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards. So this card, by itself, shuts down Escape, also shuts down the Witch Oven combo. So it's fitting that it's a dog that scares the cat away.
Yeah. It's a Cerberus. Ha!
You're right, it has 3 heads. Okay, now we can move on.
I did totally miss that, though. It was way down there. All right, lands. I'll talk about the uncommon land, because it's a reprint, but it's a good reprint.
All right, go ahead.
Field of Ruin. We had it in Ixalan? Yeah. It was either Ixalan or Rivals of Ixalan. I think it was Ixalan. But tap, add a colorless, and then you may pay 2, tap and sack, to destroy target non-basic land an opponent controls. Each player then searches their library for a basic land card, puts it onto the battlefield, then shuffles their library. This is a great reprint. It's not a broken card. It's a good card. And yeah, that's what I'll say.
I'll say it's a little late to the party. I can just imagine him just kind of like this card just kind of like walking in like, hey guys, how's it going? I heard there's, you know, Field of Dead's a problem.
Oh yeah, it definitely could have been printed for that issue.
Let me help you out. Field of Dead? What do you mean he's banned? I was going to help you guys. You just had to wait.
Unbanned Field of the Dead.
You just had to wait until Theros came out. So you just had to deal with Field of the Dead for 5 months. It's fine, guys.
Yeah, then Oko wouldn't have been broken. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. and then we've got the rest. So in M20, we received the enemy cycle of the Scrylands. So it's they intertapped. They tap for 2 different colors of the color pair, and they scry 1 when they enter the battlefield. So we're getting the allied colors. So that's the red green, the blue black, the blue white, the red black, and the white green. So we're finishing the cycle. So it'll be nice to have all of them in Standard now instead of just half of them. So awkwardly having less consistent mana bases right now because of the certain color pairs that you choose will no longer be a problem coming this Theros. Yep. Happy reprint.
Good reprint.
Yep.
Good wizards.
Way to go. Good I did wizards. So I saw there was a faked leak, and it was a Windswept Heath. So the allied fetch lands with like a Theros art and like the Theros rare symbol, and people were passing that around the internet last week before these were revealed. So some people were getting really hyped, like, oh, allied fetches are coming back. That makes sense because you can fill the graveyard and stuff. But obviously that did not happen. Kind of unfortunate. But we already know they're not going to print fetches in Standard again. Don't be blowing smoke up my butt.
What are you talking about? There was a fetch in Throne of Eldraine.
You know what?
I'm just kidding.
It was a fetch.
It is a fetch, but it's not.
It's a balanced fetch.
A fetch.
So that's it for the reveals so far. So we basically caught you up from like the first half of this week and through all the holiday spoilers. So we'll have a lot more to talk about next week when we come back. So bye.
Peace out!